Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. For the remainder of this hour, we continue a daily series with Greg Kokel, regular guest and president of Stand to Reason, on discussing your Christian convictions. Now, there really is a technique to this, and there's, it's, like in most things in life, there's a right way to go about it, and there's a wrong way to go about it. Now, often we will judge these things on a case-by-case basis, but what are the advantages to simply asking a question rather than making a statement when discussing your Christian convictions? You say, well, I'll never get my case out. Don't be so sure about that. I know this is my impulse. My impulse is when someone says something like, there is no proof for the existence of God, well, I've got six or seven rolling around inside my head that I can rattle off, and my temptation is to start making all sorts of statements. To simply mount propositional statements, pile them together, make a defense. You know, you don't have to do that, at least not initially. There's a better way to go about it. We're going to be talking about it with Greg Kokel. It's called the Columbo Tactic. Now, we're giving away Greg's new book called Tactics to listeners with best questions or comments. Our call-in number live this Tuesday afternoon. It's February the 17th. 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-MYIE, and our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Greg Kokel is president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, author of the new book, Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. Greg, welcome back.
Hey, Todd. How you doing?
I'm doing well. When someone says something like there's no proof for the existence of God, to me, my initial temptation and reaction is to start making statements. You say not necessarily the best way to go about it. Why not?
Yeah, it is the initial impulse for those who want to engage. For those who don't want to engage or don't know how, they tuck their tail between their legs and kind of run, which is not a helpful strategy either. I'm concerned about this approach because the minute you start giving proofs for God, when someone denies his existence or says there isn't God, you've immediately set yourself up in opposition to that person. So now you have two people that are defending turf. There's a line drawn in the sand, and egos are at play, and you know, potentially an argument is brewing, and this is never very productive, in my view at least. I think there's a better way to go about it. You know, Jesus said that we should be wise as serpents, but shrewd as doves. And the way we do that is the tactical approach that we've been talking about the last couple of days. In this particular example, when someone says, it's not rational to believe in God, or there's no proof for God, instead of opposing the person, I try to ask a question. This is the heart of the tactic that you just identified as the Columbo tactic. I'll give you more detail about it in just a moment. But just imagine, for the listeners here, just imagine how much easier it is if a person says there is no proof for God, and you said something like, well, what do you mean by proof? Well, there's no good evidence for God. Well, what kind of evidence would you find acceptable? Now, notice I purposely put a little pause there, a silence, because I'm trying to punctuate the point, but it's also the case that when you ask a question like that, you're likely to get silence in return, at least initially. Notice that when you do that, it's a genial request for more information. It's friendly. You're engaging the person with an interest in their point. In fact, you're not giving away your view at all. You're not showing your hand. You may agree with them for all that they know, but you're interested to hear more of their ideas. So when you ask a question like this, the pressure is immediately off of you. It is, in a sense, back on the other person, but the other person doesn't feel pressured, at least depending on how you ask the question. If you ask it in a genuinely inquisitive way, it doesn't sound like a challenge. It sounds like you are giving him an opportunity to spend some more time to talk in detail about his own views. And people who make statements like this are usually very glad to talk more about their own views. They like to have center stage, and you're just giving them the opportunity. This takes the pressure off you, but it forces the other person to be more precise and be more clear about his own objections, so he doesn't roll over you automatically just on the force of a slogan. And that's why a question like this is so tactically sound.
So introduce us, and it's bare bones, because we're actually going to be talking about this not only today but also tomorrow, kind of refining the whole approach of the Columbo tactic. Introduce us to it.
Right. Well, the subtitle of the book is A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. And every one of those words is important as far as I'm concerned. We want to have a discussion, not a fight. And we talked about this yesterday. But what is the game plan? How is it that we can know, in a sense, how to maneuver regardless of what kind of challenge we're faced with? Well, my game plan, at its core, consists of a handful of model questions. And I'm following the lead here of the infamous Lieutenant Columbo, who many know from the TV show. And he was well known for two reasons. One, he seemed completely bumbling and inept. I mean, he'd show up, Todd, at the crime scene, rubbing his head, furrowed brows, scratching behind his neck, wondering what's going on. He looks like he can't think his way out of a wet paper bag. I mean, he looks stupid, but he's stupid like a fox because of this second element that's always there. That is that he has a plan. He has a method that allows him to get to the heart of the matter. And if you recall, you know, in the first scenes, he's at the crime scene, and he's rubbing his head, and at some point he'll say, you know, there's something about this thing that bothers me. Do you mind if I ask you a question? And then he asks this question. And he gets an answer, and he's, oh, well, you're very intelligent. One more thing. And then he one more things him to death, you know, question after question after question. And this, he says, is a habit for him. Sorry I'm annoying you, but I can't help it. It's a habit. And this is the habit that every follower of Christ who is an ambassador should get into. That is, using well-placed questions to take the offensive in a conversation, but to do it in a non-offensive way, to then put you in the driver's seat of the conversation. Now, in my book, Tactics, I keep saying our because I'm kind of thinking of the broad organization, because we've been, at Stand to Reason, we've been teaching this for years and years and years to great effect. But in my book on tactics that we're talking about, there are actually three different specific uses for questions, and each use is, in a sense, advanced with a different sort of question. And these uses then become the foundational game plan. So when I go into any situation, Todd, I know I have these tools, these questions in my hip pocket, and I have a plan on how to respond no matter what challenge is offered. I know how I can proceed. Now, it doesn't mean that I always come up with a clever question, and we'll talk about ways that we can improve our Columbo tactic, but at least I know what I'm doing here in the sense that I'm not caught off guard. I have no idea how to proceed, and it would be better for me just to keep my mouth shut and let it slide. I don't have to let it slide. I can engage in a friendly conversation using the Columbo tactic, all the while staying in the driver's seat.
This thing is I've discovered through is since you introduced me to it years ago, in the course of our many conversations, mm-hmm. It is a security blanket for a good one for walking into a situation or encountering an unexpected question, mm-hmm. and to say to yourself, all right, we'll talk about this later. I don't have to bear the burden of proof here.
Mm-hmm.
But I can simply inquire as to what this person really means. More often than not, you know what I discover, Greg? I discover that people who make bold statements often haven't even thought them through very well.
That's right. Now, this is something that I mention and I go in detail on in the book, this very point that you're making, Todd. I mean, you're in a profession that really values, obviously, the ability to ask good questions. But when you – those who are not talk show hosts still can develop this ability, and it's not difficult, like I said, if you have the plan in place. And I mentioned that there are three uses to the Columbo question, the Columbo tactic, and the first use of it is the use that Columbo makes of his tactic initially, and that is to simply gather information. And I mean, there are a lot of we encounter circumstances or statements or conversations and things that people say are incredibly vague. I think, for example, that there is no proof for God. That's a vague statement, partly because it seems a little unusual because there seems to be so much proof of God at least arguably, available for people. Why is it that this person can make this rather extreme statement? There is no proof. Or people will say things like, well, everything is relative, and then they'll simply dismiss you. This is another one of those phrases that should never go unchallenged with a question. And the question for, in both cases, that I would initially use is basically the one I used with you. What do you mean by that? That's the model question. That's the first Columbo question that is meant to then gather information. Now, of course, you can use any kind of variation of that that you want. When I said, what kind of proof do you have in mind, it would really work. I mean, this is a way of kind of drawing them out, trying to get a sense of what they mean when they say there is no good proof or adequate proof for God's existence. What exactly would you like to see then? What would appeal to you? What would make sense to you as evidence? Sometimes people say, well, it's irrational to believe in God. And I'll say, what is it specifically that is so irrational about someone believing in God? Now, it may seem to, say, the Christian who hears that statement, that the answer to that is obvious. But it isn't obvious to me. And it's not at all clear that the person who makes the statement has ever thought beyond just the slogan.
Okay, let's come back to that. Greg Kokel is our guest. We're talking about the Columbo tactic, simply asking a question and waiting for the answer and listening to it. We'll be right back.
Won't you answer me? Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Noah's flood, was it worldwide?
Answers with Ken Ham, one of the writers for Answers magazine.
Some Christians actually say that the Bible teaches that Noah's flood was only a local event. But what does the Bible really teach? The language of Genesis chapter 6 through 9 makes it so obvious that the event of the flood was a global catastrophe. The Bible teaches that the flood waters covered the high mountains for about 9 months. Now, how could water stand above the mountains in a local area for months and not spill anywhere? If you read Genesis carefully, you'll find there are at least 30 times in which language is used that makes it so obvious the flood affected the entire globe. You read phrases like, all flesh, every living thing, all the high hills under the whole of heaven, and so it goes on. Not only this, but 3 times God promises he'll never again send a flood like this. In fact, he established the Rainbow Covenant as a promise he'd never repeat it. Of course, there have been many local floods since this time, but Genesis is clear. The flood covered the entire globe.
You know, many people ask us, were dinosaurs on Noah's Ark? For the surprising answer, you need to read Ken Ham's booklet on dinosaurs. You know, the booklets are so good, they can be passed out as evangelistic tools. So we'll send 10 of them to you for your donation of any size today. Call our toll-free number and request the booklets on dinosaurs at 1-888-89-ANSWERS. 888-89-ANSWERS. Or on the web, answersoffer.org.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, my people are destroyed by lack of knowledge. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastors or lay leaders to hold a seminar in your area. Go to theclcc.org.
Maybe tonight I got a question for you.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talking to Greg Kokel about the Columbo tactic. It's the grandpappy of all tactics when it comes to discussing your Christian convictions. And the question that it begins with, what do you mean by that, is really the Genesis question. It's the question from which all the others that are involved in the Columbo tactic spring. You might even discover, as we were talking about before the break, that if you ask that simple question just once of someone who's made a statement with which you disagree that runs counter to your Christian convictions, you might discover that they really don't have an answer for that very question. But sometimes they do have an answer. Now, here's your chance to win a copy of Greg's new book called Tactics. We have several books to give away to listeners with the best questions or comments live this Tuesday afternoon, the 17th of February. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, and our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Greg, what if they do know what they're talking about? I've discovered more often than not they don't, and they haven't thought it through, and then it becomes a very cooperative effort in thinking through their – I mean, it really becomes kind of a joint effort. It's, let's think through your position and see whether it holds any water. But what if someone actually has thought it through?
Well, a couple of things are accomplished with your question even so. I think when you ask the question and you get silence, that's kind of a bonus. That's not what you're after. What you're after is an explanation. So it's a good thing in some sense if they can begin to articulate your their point, partly because you've asked a question that is friendly and flattering to the person, and they are responding. What's happening in the process? Well, you're building a friendly, interactive relationship, even if it's just a short-term thing. There's something, as I mentioned earlier, that is very genial about that interaction. So there's no defenses up. They're just talking about their views, which is great. Another thing that you're going to get in the process, if they do know something about what they're talking about, is you're going to get an education. I had someone ask me once, what's a good book on Buddhism? I said, why do you want a book on Buddhism? And they said, well, I have a friend who's a Buddhist who I work with, and I want to know how to witness to them. And I said, don't read a book on Buddhism. That's a lot of work. And chances are the Buddhism you learn about isn't going to be the Buddhism they believe in anyway, especially if they're American. The better thing is to invite them out to Starbucks, sit down and have a cup of coffee, and ask that person, what do you mean by that? That is, to explain, I hear you're a Buddhist. I'm interested in that. I know very little about it. I wonder what your ideas are. Tell me about your Buddhism. And there you go. You're off and running. And you're getting an education, not just on Buddhism, but specifically on the Buddhism of the person with whom you want to have spiritual conversation. And so you're building that kind of rapport here without being pushy, even though you're in the driver's seat. Now, what you're going to find out then is what the person actually knows. And I think it's important for people to take note of their point of view, the details of it. And I'll tell you what this also helps us to avoid is it helps us to avoid getting their view wrong. Sometimes we'll charge out ahead thinking we know what the other person means. And this happens to me with some regularity on the radio. Somebody offers a question, and off I go with this great explanation. And it turns out that I've explained a problem he wasn't asking about, or I refuted a point of view they didn't hold. When I listened more carefully second time around, I realized that I'd missed the point entirely. Well, we don't want to miss the point. We don't want to misrepresent somebody's view. It's not only, it makes us look foolish, but it's bad manners. It's called a straw man fallacy if we persist in this kind of thing. And so by asking the question, what do you mean by that, we get a lot of information from them that then kind of sets the groundwork, if you will, for sets the table for how we pursue in the conversation after that, or if we pursue it at all. I mean, it might be that we decide we don't have any place to go, but we don't know that until we, get up to the plate and start swinging at pitches, so to speak.
Okay, what would be the next question? I mean, I imagine if someone is really interested in hearing what the other person has to say and actually gathering information, as you have said, you might ask, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
Several times in a row, because there'll be some clarification. But what would be the next basic question, kind of building block question?
Yeah, that's important. And let me just underscore that before I move on, is that this is a question that you can ask all day long until the cows come home sometimes because of the ambiguities even in the further explanation. Just keep your interest level up and be kind, and like I said, you get an education. Now, once you have a clear fix on the person's view, whether it takes one question or 20 times asking some variation of that question, then you have another task, and this is the second use of Columbo. First one is to gather information. We use the model question, what do you mean by that? The second use of Columbo is what I call reversing the burden of proof. Now, Todd, I know you know this concept, but let me explain it for your listeners. The idea of burden of proof is the responsibility that someone has to give reasons for whatever they claim. Now, who carries that responsibility? Who bears that burden? And the simple rule is whoever makes the claim bears the burden. So if anybody says it so, there is no God, for example, or the Bible is just a bunch of fables or something like that, well, then it seems to me it is their job to say why they think it's so. And there's a very important principle here, Todd, and that is that you know, in the immortal words of Desi Arnaz, they got a lot of splaining to do, you know, themselves. In other words, we have let the other side off with a free ride much of the time, where they get to make the challenge or the claim, and then it's up to us to figure out how to refute it. The rule is, though, that if they make the claim, it's not our job to refute it, it's their job to prove it. That is, to give evidence why we should take the point of view seriously. The temptation is strong, like you mentioned earlier, to jump in and then challenge, and to give our own reasons. But now if we do that, we're making our job over difficult for us when we don't need to. If we use those first two questions, we are still in a relaxed and genial mode, and the other person is doing the heavy lifting. We first find out clearly what their view is, and then we push the burden of proof back on them, and we do that with a different model question. And here's that question. Now, how did you come to that conclusion? Let me say it again. Now, how did you come to that conclusion? Now, that is a model question, once again, that you could say, what makes you think that's the right way to see it? Or, I'm curious, why would you, that idea seem compelling to you? Or, what are your reasons for holding that view? There are a lot of different ways to ask the question. But what you're trying to do is prevent the other person from giving what I sometimes call a bedtime story. That is, they just conjure up a tale that's meant to put your view or argument to rest, and they don't feel they have any burden, any responsibility to give reasons why you should take their view seriously. And this question keeps them from taking advantage of you in that way.
1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, and our in-studio email address this Tuesday afternoon, the 17th of February, talkback at issuesetc.org. Here's Scott in Oakwood, Illinois, calling. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Todd, and hi, Greg.
Hello, Scott.
Hi. It seems like the Colombo tactic is great if you're joining a conversation that's already happening. I want to know what happens when you're on the receiving end of a Colombo offensive. How do you stay in the driver's seat without making it sound like a conversational power grab and keeping the conversation genial?
Well, that is a marvelous question, Scott. Stay on hold, if you would. I'm going to send you a copy of Greg's new book, Tactics, a Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. Greg, about 2 minutes for an answer before we take another break.
Yeah, I actually deal with that in the third or fourth chapter of the book. You know, what do you do when somebody uses Colombo against you? By the way, if somebody asks me the first question, what do you mean by that? I'm very happy to provide an answer for that. I want to tell people what I mean by that. If they ask me, now, how did I come to that conclusion? Well, I'd like to tell them that, too. I mean, these aren't questions I'm afraid of answering because I've done my own homework and I'm prepared to answer those things. And I think that every Christian, in some measure, should be able to do that and therefore not fear those two questions. If you're not sure how to, you know, if you don't have the goods, so to speak, if they say, what do you mean by that, or some variation, we shouldn't be making statements that we can't explain more carefully, even though we don't have to be theologians, but we should be able to at least articulate our views in different words. The bigger problem with someone else using Colombo against us is not when they use Colombo in the first or the second purposes, that is to gain information or to ask us to give reasons for our view. Although the second is a little more difficult. The really difficult one is when they use questions in a leading way to kind of lead us down the primrose path. Now, we haven't talked about that yet, but we will. And that's where we want to have some resistance. And sometimes it might be fair entirely just to simply say, you know, I'm not comfortable answering all the questions. I'm not sure if I can answer them well. But if you want to explain your view and the reasons you hold it, I'd be glad to listen. But I just haven't worked through all my issues yet. I mean, these are the kinds of things that you might say to parry some of the questions though I don't think any Christian should really be fearful of the first two, the ones we've covered already.
All right. It's part two of a five-part daily series on discussing your Christian convictions. We're talking with Greg Kokel about the Columbo tactic, our call-in number, giving away his book, by the way, Tactics, a Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or talkback at issuesetc.org, talkback at issuesetc.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. Greg Kokel is our guest, president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California. More after this. Greg Kokel is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. You're listening to Issues Etc. By the way, you can find out more about Greg's new book, Tactics, at issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Greg, this email comes from Don in Kansas. He says, several weeks ago, I had a discussion with an atheist, and he told me that he could knock down any argument I could put forth for the Christian faith. I told him to start. He wanted me to explain the problem of evil in the world. I asked, what is evil? How does he know that something is evil? He said, the moral law. I asked him, where did the moral law come from? He said it grew out of human consciousness as man rose up from apes. I asked him, where were the links in man's ascent? He said they hadn't been found yet. I asked him, where did life come from? He said, it came from outer space billions of years ago. It sounds like an interesting foray into the Columbo tactic there. Your thoughts?
It is. Don has done a superb job, at least, especially with his opening questions. I think he let the atheist get away with some things there about halfway through. But his earliest questions, especially when the atheist said he could knock down any Christian argument or whatever, and then says, what about the problem of evil? And he says, what do you mean by evil? This is precisely the kind of question that needs to be asked at this point. And people will generally describe acts of evil, well, murder, rape, pillaging, torture, that kind of thing. And the real question, and I think this is what Don was after, is why would you label those things evil to begin with? And then he said, because of the moral law. Right. Now, where did the moral law come from? And this is where I think the atheist tripped up, and maybe a different question after this comment would have been better. But he says it grew out of human consciousness. I don't know how moral obligations can grow out of human consciousness as we evolve from the ape to the human being, or the ape-like creature to a human being. And that's the question that could have been asked. Exactly how does objective moral principles just simply evolve or emerge from human consciousness? Remember, Darwinian evolution, which he's appealing to there, is a materialistic system. There are no immaterial realities in that system. There isn't moral obligations that just emerge out of the matter. There's nothing but matter in that system. So how does he make sense of it on his system, and on his way of thinking as a materialist? And but in principle, I mean, Don was brilliant, I think, in moving forward the way he did, and that's really the kind of thing we have in mind. Notice, by the way, with the questions that he was using, Todd, you can almost imagine how relaxed Don must have been in the midst of this barrage, you know, because he's got the question then that puts the challenge appropriately back on the other guy to make sense of the kinds of claims or challenges to Christianity that he's making at the moment. And that's a great place to be, in the driver's seat.
A big part of this, I've discovered in practicing it, is not rising to the bait. That is, when your opponent, for lack of a better word, either intentionally or unintentionally, hangs that lure out in front of you that would invite you to stop asking questions and stop and jump out of the driver's seat.
Right.
You simply cannot rise to the bait. That's one of the hardest things about this tactic, the Columbo tactic.
Yeah, and I want to just encourage people to be charitable with themselves, because it takes a while sometimes engaging in conversations like this to kind of see what's going on. And we'll probably talk a little bit tomorrow about how, you know, you can improve your Columbo tactic. So here's what I tell people, and this is, I think I might have mentioned this yesterday, but you don't have to hit a home run. You don't even have to get on base. What we want to do you to do with these questions is to get into the batter's box, get up to bat, and then you'll learn in the process. And if you feel like you don't have any clever comebacks or special questions that could take it further, so what? That's it. Do what you can do. Later on in reflective process, we'll talk about later, you can figure out how you could have done better. But don't be hard on yourself. I've noticed, and we're doing a blog tour this week, and I've been getting a lot of information from around the Internet about people who have been reading the books or have been trained in tactics by us, Todd. And they tell me, it's amazing how easy this is to get started. Anybody can do this kind of thing. And that's my encouragement to your listeners, Todd.
Joe is listening in St. Louis. Hi, Joe.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Great.
Hey, I had a question about the discussion tactics. Do you have anything that addresses discussing things with people who constantly turn to subjective opinions and how you kind of bring that out and discuss things with them rationally and reasonably? Thanks.
All right, Joe. Thank you very much. Greg?
Thanks, Joe. A lot depends on what particular subjective opinion they have. I mean, in one sense, all opinions are subjective in the sense that they are held by subjects, that are people. They're the personal views of those people. What the second Columbo question does, though, how did you come to that conclusion, is it forces people to give reasons why they're entitled to their subjective opinion. Now, some people say, and I've had this happen before, Todd. They say, "Well, I don't have any reasons for the views that I hold," which I'm sorry, I'm chuckling, but it strikes me as so odd because now I have another question, and here's the question: why would you hold beliefs that you have no reasons to hold? You know, what's the answer to that? I would like to hear what they have to say. Sometimes they just shrug, and what they're communicating is a sense of apathy. But the subjective opinions, I think, are still vulnerable properly to the second question. How did you come to that conclusion? Now, if it's just a matter of liking ice cream, you know, over Jell-O or something like that for dessert, well, those are of necessity subjective kinds of things. And people can talk about their feelings all day long. What I want to find out is, what do they think is actually true? In spite of how they feel about things, what do they think is actually true? See, there's a question, isn't it? Ball's in their court. Well, I don't know what is true. Why is that? You don't think you can know any truth in this area? No, you can't know any truth about religion. Why would you say that? See how naturally these questions come in a circumstance? The ball's in their court. And it, appropriately so, as I mentioned, because, as I said, they got some splaining to do themselves.
Joe, if you would give us a call back, we'll send you a copy of Tactics, Greg Kokel's new book, 1-877-623-6943. Two quick final questions. I imagine at this point, it's always helpful after the encounter is over to go back and run the tape to, you know, like they would do in football. Watch the game over again and do a little post-game analysis and say, you know, where did I fall? Where did I make a mistake? What could I have done better there? Talk about that very briefly.
Yeah, or where did I do well? I do this. This is a postmortem. I do it all the time. Here's the simple principle. The easiest time to know how to come up with good questions or responses is when there's no pressure. When the pressure's on, it's harder, right? So when isn't there pressure? Either before the conversation or after the conversation. Generally, after the conversation is simple because it's fresh in your mind, and you think to yourself, "Gee, how did that go? How did I do? What could I have asked that would have been more effective in that circumstance than what I did ask?" Maybe you get stumped and you don't know where to go. So, you know, when the pressure's off, you might think of new things, and then pay attention to that, role play it a little bit, fix it in your mind so that next time around you're ready.
Okay, the next time we're going to be refining this a little bit and talking about the third use of the Columbo tactic.
Right.
A very brief preview, about 20 seconds.
Well, the third use is simply leading, using questions to lead people to a particular goal. Now, there's a number of different places you may want to lead them. And one of those maybe is you leading them to show them something they already know, and your questions bring that self-knowledge out. Another would be to lead them to see how maybe their point of view has gone askew somewhere, and maybe their idea is bad, and so you use questions to do that. But that's where we're going tomorrow.
Greg Kokel is president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, author of the new book, Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. You can find out more about Tactics tonight. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find a link right there, issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Greg, look forward to tomorrow's conversation.
I'll see you then, Todd. I look forward to it, too. Thanks.
You know, one thing that I've seen with the Columbo tactic, And I'm glad we got another day to talk about it, because it is full of subtleties. It really is. It's the beauty of the tactic. It's subtlety. And I want you to understand something, folks. When we say tactic, we don't mean trick. This is not a trick. While it may appear to be a trick if someone realizes they're being grilled for information, gently, carefully, in friendly manner, grilled for information, it's not a trick. It is a technique that makes you better at defending your Christian convictions, and you better at answering the objections of those who disagree with those convictions. It really is a very loving thing to do in debate. Think about it that way. As Christians, we are to speak the truth in love. That's the mandate of the apostle, to us, speak the truth in love. A lot of people think that means don't speak the truth or keep your mouth shut. That's not what it means. But it may mean something like asking questions. And when the opportunity emerges to actually make propositional statements, to speak the truth, you're much better equipped to do it. You know who you're talking to, what their beliefs are, and probably by the time you're done asking just a few questions using this Columbo technique, they may have begun to realize that what they thought was true at the beginning of the conversation, at the beginning of the inquiry, maybe isn't. And there's your opening. Speak the truth in love. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.